Van the Man, bringing us back in with the dark side of the street or the bright side of the road. I'm not sure what it's called. I know that it was featured in a wonderful movie directed by Martin Scorsese back in the early 80s, The King of Comedy, with the unlikely pairing of Robert De Niro and Jerry Lewis. If you haven't seen that that movie, rent it, check it out. It's great. It's hilarious and tragic all at the same time. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back, we'll get to more of your calls. Some of you have been waiting a while and have been very patient, and I appreciate it. I just wanted to mention webmaster Sean Latasore has posted a video on the coasttocoastam.com website. And just add this one to the list, these closed-circuit TV videos, which are capturing what appear to be ghostly figures. This one that Sean has posted comes from police officers in Espanola, New Mexico, and they're baffled by this surveillance video, which appears to show a blurry human-shaped figure walking through a secured area of their police station. And according to detectives, there is absolutely, absolutely no way in or out of the area without opening the gates surrounding an alarm, without sounding the alarm. And in the footage, this mysterious ghostly intruder can be seen passing through a chain link fence in the compound and slowly walking out again. Officers have also reported seeing unexplained images in the lobby, hearing strange noises at night, and feeling someone breathing down their necks in the briefing room. And then if you go to the Coast to Coast AM website, on the in the most popular section, down about three stories, another story involving a closed-circuit TV security camera, this one in England, where a ghost apparently has been caught on a security video in an antique shop. And you see in the video a glass cabinet door shattering spontaneously. And some online commentators have noticed a manifestation in the video when the glass door appears to smash to pieces all on its own. Would love to hear from someone, perhaps a security guard or someone who monitors these closed-circuit TVs. What are some of the strange, bizarre, unexplained things you've seen? Let's add that log to the fire as we take open lines into the wee hours here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, we are back here on Coast to Coast AM and open lines till the top of the hour. George, in Tucson, Arizona, you've been a real trooper. I appreciate you hanging on. You are on the air, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. My name is George, and I'm retired from the military. And I'd like to explain about a paranormal experience I had, speaking of ghosts. I was 4 years of age, and I know I was four because I wasn't in school yet, and I know I wasn't three because I couldn't have remembered so vividly the experience. I was four. I was laying in bed, staring through the darkness of my room, and suddenly three images of people, silhouettes, they were in the form of silhouettes, walked out of my bathroom and were standing in my bedroom. And they were looking at each other, and they were looking at me. And I thought for the moment they might have been my uncles playing a game with me, but then I suddenly realized that they weren't my uncles at all. And I was very fascinated by them, and I wanted to go over to them, but something of them touched me and told me not to come too close. And they were making movements and looking at me, looking at each other. And I was really fascinated. And suddenly, I said, "Dad?" And my bedroom door opened and my father walked in. And I literally said to him, "Can you take the bathrobe off the door and put it on the dresser?" And he, on impulse, grabbed the bathrobe from the hook on my door, the bedroom door, and placed it right across the dresser, which was right over from the door. And then he left the room. And then about 30 seconds later, these three silhouettes in the form of people, they came out of the bathrobe again that was lying across the dresser. They were standing in my bedroom. And one of them went over to the door, put his ear against the door, as if to hear if anyone was coming. And then suddenly, they were all standing across from each other, and one at the very left raised his arms up and had something in his hands like a camera and took a picture of me. And the next one over for him was standing behind a pot, and this pot had a very interesting shape, and he was stirring it. And then the next one over from him was just standing there, motionless, looking directly at me and not doing anything. And then suddenly, these objects disappeared from them, and their atoms started to break up. It appeared their feet were coming up to the head region, and their heads were going down to the feet region. And as that was taking place, they were coming towards me. And they came very close to my head. I was laying in bed, and I put a blanket right over my head. And a stream of lit atoms came right through the blanket and through my eyes and inside my head. And the whole inside of my head lit up like a fluorescence, inside and all around my head. And then I suddenly woke up from it. And I recall that very vividly, and I'm going to be 63.
I'll say the details are remarkably vivid. It sounds, George, like you were describing what some paranormal researchers or investigators call shadow people. Is that accurate? Could we call them shadow people?
Well, maybe you can, but these were three people. They looked like actual people, but they were in the form of silhouettes. You could say shadow people. And I found out what they were trying to tell me. I got a book on dream interpretation, and I checked the images in the book of what appeared in the episode I had, the camera, the pot, and the spoon that one of them was stirring, and the three silhouettes and the bathrobe. And from what I understand, the bathrobe meant royalty, and the three silhouettes meant masculinity. And from what I read, they were trying to tell me that along my lifeline, I would experience a disturbance, but something would be with me and keeping me well during my disturbance. That's what I understand they were telling me. But the two of them were conveying the messages to me, and the third one didn't convey any message to me. And I don't think I was dreaming, because a dream is a message from your subconscious mind. And in order to receive a message from your subconscious mind would have to have recordings of various things that the subconscious mind would feed you back in the form of a dream. But I don't believe my subconscious mind was trying to tell me that I was going to experience a disturbance along my lifeline.
Well, the other thing is George, I mean, how many people can remember a mere dream almost 60 years later? Mm-hmm. Dreams often, you know, are easily forgotten. So it's quite possible that you actually experienced this. Now, I'm not sure how useful, if this wasn't a dream, I'm not sure how useful this sort of Jungian symbology would be for, you know, trying to figure out what was being imparted to you. Who knows? Uh-huh. If these were shadow people, if they're interdimensional, you know, maybe they're not trying to tell you anything. Maybe they're just watching you. It's hard to say, but I appreciate the call. It was a good one. Amy is in Oxford, Arkansas. Amy, good morning. Thanks for hanging in. Hello, Amy. Good morning. Are you there, Amy? All right. I think we lost Amy temporarily. Maybe she'll call back. Let's move along. And also on the wild card line, Elaine is in Fort Myers, Florida. Hello, Elaine.
Hi. Good morning to you. I just wanted to make a comment that what really makes me believe in the near-death experience is that my father told me a story that back in the 1950s, late 50s and everything, I mean, his profession was that he was a foreman plumber, and he didn't get struck by lightning, but he did get electrocuted in his job. And he told me that yes, he went across somehow or another, you know, there was somebody, some people there, or something there, beings or whatever, that asked him, you know, did he want to go back and everything, and he said I emphatically told them. He said, I have a young family. I was only just a little tiny girl back then and everything. And he said, I really have a lot more to do. He said, my life isn't where I want it, and I really need to go back, and I really need to go back. And so whoever this was he talked to, whatever beings it was he talked to, he came back to take care of my whole family. And he died about 2 years ago of cancer and everything. But he told me this story, I guess, about 4 or 5 years before he even died or anything. And the thing that really makes me believe it is that he was one of these strict Catholics, you know, where all he believes in is heaven, hell, and purgatory, and just absolutely nothing whatsoever ever. You know, I mean, that's all he believed in, and he still believed in it till, you know, he died at 86 years old. But he still told me that, he told me this happened to him, and if he could tell me that happened to him when he doesn't even believe in anything but the strict Catholic stuff, I know it's real. So I just wanted to make that comment.
I appreciate it, Elaine, and thanks for holding on for so long. Another wild card line, Marguerite is in Mesa, Arizona. Good morning, Marguerite.
Hi, good morning, Richard. Two fantastic subjects. I'm a member of IONS, the International Society for Near-Death Studies, but when you asked for lightning experiences, I'm like, oh, I have to call in, because in the mid-80s, I experienced that. I was at a house in Michigan. It had rained earlier that night. I was on the phone with my dad. We were remodeling this house. I said, Dad, I need to get off the phone. I went outside. I unhooked my dog from a chain, laid it on the sidewalk, went in, and I was standing in front of a window with a screwdriver in my hand. And lightning struck the area. It wasn't a direct hit, but it blew out the voltage regulator in my pickup truck, the transformer. It blew through the window, and I experienced I experienced burns where my jewelry was. You could taste it. It was looking for a place to ground out. It welded metal cabinets in the kitchen, and it blew all the electricity out. It blew nails out of a garage that wasn't attached, and it finally grounded out near a big LP gas tank that luckily was empty, about the size of a car in front of the tank. And it blew a 3-foot hole in the sidewalk and welded my dog's chain, so I'm glad I brought him in.
Oh, my goodness. That's what confuses me, is that here we have something, as I mentioned earlier, it's 5 times hotter, a bolt of lightning, than the surface of the sun. I mean, it has the ability, if it lingers in your body, to sear your organs, to turn you to ash. And yet, remarkably, very few people are actually killed by lightning. Most people are merely injured. And I'd love to find out why that is. What prevents people from, you know, thank God that people survive, and you survived, but what is it
I did experience some strange physical effects. I could smell parts per trillion. I experienced severe headaches for a period of time. I was always kind of intuitive, but it increased my intuitive abilities a lot. I'm now a psychic and a medium, a certified clinical hypnotherapist, and I went on to get a degree in transformational psychology. It kind of changed the course of my life,
I'll say. Now, you mentioned, you said a lot of remarkable things there, but I want to backtrack a little bit. You said that you could smell parts per trillion. How are you able to verify that? I mean, did you have that tested under scientific conditions, or how can you verify?
Not under scientific conditions, but my sense of smell became so strong that I could smell people smoking cigarettes in the yard of the house, and they were a long distance away, driving by like on a freeway. I'm like, this is crazy. And I thought I was experiencing something that was more neurologic until finally someone said that that can be a side effect of being struck by lightning, that instead of smelling like parts per million, our olfactory sense is very strong. That increases sometimes with lightning strikes. So I experienced more sensitivities to all kinds of scents and also to sound.
Now, the fact that you developed these psychic abilities after being struck by lightning, what do you think what does that say about, you know, who we are and what we are? If a lightning strike can unlock that ability, what does that tell us?
I think that we all have that capability. I was very intuitive as a child, but it's something that we tend to shut down, I think, and tamp down. It's not something that's necessarily encouraged. And I have premonition dreams, and I have all kinds of things, and I would journal things and conversations and events, and they would come true. But I didn't really put that into use until I felt like I had the schooling and some validity behind that, because I just wanted to be able to explain to people why it happens or how does it happen. I think we all have that, and sometimes there's experiences in our life that increase that ability.
Did the lightning affect your personality at all? Did it change who you are?
I would say for a period of time, I was really kind of depressed after that. I didn't have a typical near-death experience, and because of the severe ringing and the headaches and the increased sensitivity almost to allergies and foods and a lot of different things, I was like, it's like, how do you cope with this? But it does actually dissipate, and it changed my lifestyle. It's like I was never a smoker or a drinker, but I stopped going out to like clubs or places where there was a lot of crowds and things like that just because of the sensitivity. So that is something, like I said, just personally. And then over the years, as I've learned to work with energies, I'm also a Reiki master practitioner, and I really enjoy learning about all these different things. We learn, I think, how to turn it on and how to turn it off, and when to share and when not to share, if that makes sense. Because I know a lot of the people that were calling in say, you know, sometimes they talk to people about it, and it's all about energy. And I also think it's all about how we're really connected. It's that... you know, it's like that, the Chinese have a saying, there's a thread that connects us all, and that's what it's all about. And many of the callers are talking about love being the essence of everything. I think that's the biggest lesson, that we're all connected, and love is that connecting factor.
And all in all, Marguerite, would you say that being struck by lightning was a curse or a gift?
No, I would say at the time it happened, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can deal with all these changes and having to redo all the expensive things with the house. I looked at it as more of a curse, but as the years have gone on, I realized that it was a real gift. And I think you're probably familiar with Danion Brinkley. I've had an opportunity to meet him at a couple events, including a conference here in Scottsdale, Arizona for the NDEs. And, you know, I've gone on to work with hospice patients and different things. So it really is a blessing. But at the time it happened, it's like, whoa, there's some medical effects and there's some interesting effects, and it's learning to cope with all of that. Because it does, I think, shift energies and shift vibrations.
Marguerite, I appreciate the call. That was fascinating. Thank you for that. All right, we'll head on into a break. And when we come back, hopefully we'll hear from more lightning survivors. And we'll also continue along with our near-death experiences. Any security guards out there or anyone responsible for monitoring closed circuit security video monitors? What have you seen? Any ghostly figures where there shouldn't have been? Back with more of Coast to Coast, my name is Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie. Welcome back. And that's America with Sister Golden Hair from their fifth album, Hearts, which came out in 1975, and it was their second single to reach number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. Just a reminder, I'll be back again tonight, and I guess until I get it right, I'll keep coming back, I hope. Anyway, Dan Riskin will join me. Dan is a professor of biology, and he's the host of a great show on Animal Planet. It's called Monsters Inside Me. He's got a brand new book out called Mother Nature is Trying to Kill You. And he's going to share some jaw-dropping examples that illuminate how brutal nature can truly be. Slothful worms that can hide in your body for up to 30 years. Wrathful snails with poisonous harpoons. In the first hour, investigative journalist John Rappaport will be here. This is an important story. If you haven't heard about this whistleblower from the Centers for Disease Control, who has admitted through an attorney that he left out vital data in a 2004 vaccine study. John Rappaport will have all the details. And then Sunday night, George Knapp returns with Dr. Bruce Maccabee, a U.S. Navy research physicist, and he'll talk about how the FBI and the CIA collected information which, when combined with evidence collected by the Air Force intelligence, proves that at least some UFOs are interplanetary craft. All right, we'll get back to open lines, surviving lightning, near-death experiences, and eerie closed-circuit security cameras when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Wildcard Line, and Lynette is in Warsaw, Kentucky. Good morning, Lynette.
Good morning, right. I started having an allergy attack. It started May the 9th. Lightning went through the microwave, TV, furnace, me, and refrigerator. May the 21st, I was walking through the living room. It went through the TV, me, furnace, and refrigerator. July the 7th, I'm sitting by the refrigerator about 7:15 eating because I love the quietness in the kitchen. Lightning come down through the range hood, went through my eyes and the controls of the refrigerator. And you know how that bullseye looks? That's the way it looked for days. And I'm like, dear Lord, well, you're in there, because I have diabetic bleeding eyes, and the pharmacy won't give me my shoes, because they say I'm not taking diabetic medicine. I said, dear Lord, while you're in there, please burn out the bleeders. They're not bleeding as bad. And I had a crippled right knee, and it went down to that knee on the 21st of May. And my leg, this happened at 5, by 8 o'clock, my leg was so big. I'm like, oh, dear Lord, while you're in there, burn out that arthritis. Amen. And then ghosts, my house is full of ghosts. And people say, you're crazy, you're crazy. I've had black eyes, black places on my head. The first year, 22 years ago, the thing picked me up in a chair and threw me down on all fours. I guess it meant move. So,
how many times
it.
Have you been struck by lightning, Lynette? How many times have you lost count?
Oh, three times that I know of this
three
year.
Times. And just this year. And did you seek medical attention for it?
Well, I kept telling the doctors lightning went through my eyes and it was like bullseye. And they're like, yeah, yeah. So finally, I went to the doctor. I said, I can't see good. And he upped the cortisone stuff, but what can you do? Should be dead, you know. But I've already died three times, January 31st, 1992, and July 10th, 2013. My teeth started chattering. I'm in ER room 7. I'm like, send the nurse. I'm shaking. And the woman said, what? I said, send the nurse. The second time I called her, the bed went up and down, and I could feel lasers going through my toes and ripping the insides of my, from my head to my feet. When it got to my stomach, it was like a jelly roll, you know. God was pulling a poison out of my body. And I called my son. I said, I'm dying. I'll be dead in 15 minutes. Do not come here. I told him where to ship the body and hung up the phone and said, remember, I love you. And I bet he thought, what a call from your mother at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I lived through all of that, and I heard the lady talking. I am a sensitive. Dead people come to me. Sylvia Brown and I should meet. You're not 30 when you die. My boyfriend died in 1986, but I didn't know what it meant. They stood this little colored boy by the refrigerator at 8:30 at night. He was glowing in a white hat with the little rope around it, and a white robe with the rope around it. And he was talking to me, and I said, hello, who are you? And I saw him fading, so I put my hand through him. And 2 months later, the daughter said, Daddy's here on the mantle. I said, what you mean he's on the mantle? You know, he ain't got no legs. She said he died, and I didn't know how to get in touch with you, but she's lying. He's supposed to have been buried in Warsaw. He lives from Jackson, Mississippi. He died in Chicago, Illinois. But yeah, I am a sensitive. People say I'm crazy, but the great Dr. Tom Welton, the Northern Kentucky head of psychiatrics, said that I was the smartest black woman in Warsaw, the elite black of Warsaw. And he had me down to a dinner party for Sandy Dennis with when Mayor Richard Woods was alive. So
there you go, Lynette. Great story, and survived three lightning strikes. Appreciate the call. East of the Rockies, Michael is in Virginia. Good morning, Michael.
Thank you so much, Richard. I have four examples of near-death experiences. One of them involves serious injury. The others, no injury. The first category, Daniel Brinkley, who has told his story on this program many times. Nobody can surpass his account. I hope you have that up on the archives so people can get it. It's a life-changing experience just to hear it. The other three men, George Norrie, Ambassador Leo Wanta, and myself, near-death experiences without injury, and it causes me to want to make a point about that. I think our lives should be changed as dramatically when we don't receive injury in a near-death experience as if we had gone through the tunnel, gone through the horrible experience of being injured and going to the hospital and having that long recovery. If you have a child that has been spared death, you should have your life changed just as much. If it was a five-year-old that just narrowly missed getting hit by a car. George talks about not going through a stop sign because he had a dream that warned him. If we really gave thought to these experiences, thank the God who saved us from going through it with injury, then our lives would change dramatically. I've had 12 near-death experiences in the last 20 years, and because I have given tremendous attention to those experiences when they occurred, I learned from them, and I learned to live my life every day. Every day, I want to know exactly what God wants me to be doing every moment of the day.
Why do they keep sending you back, Michael? And, you know, I'm glad they do, but why do they keep sending you back? 12 near-death experiences, and here you are.
Well, for the exact same reasons that the Apostle Paul describes in the Bible when he gives the whole list of near-death experiences that he went through, being left in the deep for many nights, being stoned four times and left for dead. Or he just goes through one after another and after another. You have to have a purpose. You have to be trying to accomplish something for the God who put you here. But now I want to bring this to you. I want to ask you if you had any experience like that. But before I do, I want to say this. I think your interview with Ambassador Leo Wanta, in which he described a near-death experience in Singapore, very much like many that I've had, because I've lived a very dangerous life. I think that interview was probably the most exciting interview ever on Coast to Coast.
And wow, that's very generous of you to say so. Thank you very much.
And I hope you will keep contact with him. I put him through a strong test that night when
did we lose Michael? I think we lost Michael there. Sorry about that, Michael. I appreciate the call nonetheless. Let's go to the first-time caller line, and David is in Concord, North Carolina. Good morning, David.
Morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, thank you.
You're actually my favorite host on the show. I came in contact with the AWARE project through the latest Psychology Today magazine.
Let me just remind, David, sorry to interrupt. I just want to remind people who are just joining us or missed the first 2 hours of the show. The AWARE project is an undertaking by a critical care physician in New York State to sort of catalog these near-death experiences in a hospital setting, sort of under scientific scrutiny.
Yeah, Sam Parnia.
Right, Sam Parnia. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Who wrote the book Erasing Death? Oddly enough, after reading the Psychology Today article, I decided to go and get the book at my local retailer. They didn't have it. I had to order it. It arrived yesterday, and I had it laying on the bed. And when you came on, before that, earlier this evening, I had actually thought about leaving a message for George to do a show that you're actually doing right now, which is just incredible.
Isn't serendipity grand?
It is. Is it not? Is it not? I'm a true believer, and I am a true believer. 3 years ago, I had triple bypass surgery and was put into a medically induced coma for 11 days after that. And because I'm fibromyalgic, they were worried about controlling the level of pain if I came out of it too soon. And all I can say is that I didn't experience the tunnel of light or anything that we usually hear about, but it was some of the best rest I have ever received in my life.
You got some heavy rest, 11 days worth.
Yeah, truly, and that was a surprise because when we are in that state, we don't know time. So when I did come to, I did not realize that I had been out for 11 days, and I did not realize that I had had open heart surgery, because when I went into the operating room, all they were going to do was to clean the arteries. But when they got in there, I was lucky enough to have one of the top heart surgeons in the United States on call, and let's just call him Dr. Christie. He's a local, and I truly believe that it was because of him that I, him and God Almighty, that I.
But during that 11 days, David, there was no life review, no memory tunnel, no energy beings, no conversations with a higher being saying you must go back. None of that.
Not that I remember. Although I believed in that for years before this. 20 years ago, in a 9-month period, I lost both my best friends and my grandmother. Both my best friends were lost to HIV infection, and I was lucky enough to be there for both of their passings. And the stuff that I witnessed 20 years ago would cause the hairs on the back of your neck to stand on end.
Well, that's another great subject area, and that is not necessarily the person who is having the near-death experience, but those who are, caring for the terminally ill when they pass, and some of the remarkable things that people have witnessed during that time. David in Concord, appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. The wild card line, Rick is in Graceville, Florida. Rick, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, good morning, Rich. My landlady, also my friend, was struck on the side of the head by lightning while she was driving down the road about 22 years ago and blew her teeth out, put her in a coma for 9 days on life support. And when they finally unplugged her from life support, she sat bolt upright in the bed and said, "Where's my coffee?" And the woman never drank coffee before in life. And the doctor fainted. And
is she still with us, Rick?
It left her with epilepsy and habitual compulsive liar.
Oh my! Is she still?
Yeah.
Is she still with us?
Yeah.
Now that's interesting. Struck by lightning in a moving car, because I'd always, and obviously I'm wrong, but I'd always thought that one of the safer places to be was in a car. You're in a vehicle, rubber tires, and so forth. But obviously, that's not the case.
No, it doesn't, if, especially if there's metal in the car. And her car was one of the older Suburbans that had a lot of metal. She'd reached the roll-up window because it started raining, and the window handle was metal.
Ah, right,
and,
right.
And then obviously, and came out.
And obviously she underwent a personality transformation. I mean, as you say, she's now a compulsive liar as a result of this lightning strike.
Pretty much, yeah. And she can't help it.
Remarkable story, Rick. Thanks for getting in touch tonight. I appreciate it. Good talking with you. Wild card line again, and Vicki is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Vicki. Good morning.
Hi, Richard. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
I have two. I have the lightning strike, and I have the near-death thing, which I think was the most spiritual thing that ever happened to me.
I've got about 2 minutes. Sorry, Vicki. I've got about 2 minutes here. Can we talk about the lightning strike?
Yes.
Thank you.
I was in a training class at work on software and computers, and the lightning hit outside. They had a lot of metal furniture. It was a balcony. It was concrete. And we had an all-window wall. So it went through. I was in about the middle of the room, and it hit me. And evidently, they were grounded well, or I'd be dead. But the girl beside me could see the computers kind of glowed purple light. And I felt it go through me and my arms and legs, and then she felt it in her arms, and two people in front of me felt it in their legs. But what was so odd, it made me shoot my arm out, my right arm out, in front of me, and I toned, I made noise like a chant, real loud, and then I said, I've been touched, it's just like, it was just, amazing, and I did have pain in my arms later, but because it was grounded, I survived it, but it did make me involuntarily shoot my arm out and tone like that.
That's remarkable. Listen, appreciate the call. Thank you, all of you, for calling in. For George Norrie, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasor, Lex Lonehood, Tim Banal, and here in Toronto, Wes Atkinson, Scott Guest, and Gord Harris, I'm Richard Serra. Thanks for your ears and your wonderful voices. Good night.